Chapter 49. Holden.
Don't do this, Naomi said. She didn't beg, or cry, or make demands. All the power of her request lay in its quiet simplicity. Don't do it. Holden opened the suit locker just outside the main airlock and reached for his Martian-made armor. A sudden and visceral memory of radiation sickness on Eros stopped him. They've been pumping radiation into the king for hours now, right?
Don't go over there, Naomi said again.
Bobby, Holden said over the comm. Here, she replied with a grunt. She was helping Amos prep their gear for the assault on the Mao science station. After his one encounter with the Mao protomolecule hybrid, he could only imagine they were going loaded for bear. What are these standard Martian armor suits rated for radiation-wise?
Like mine? Bobby asked.
No, not a powered suit. I know they harden you guys for close proximity blasts. I'm talking about this stuff we pulled out of the map crate.
About as much as a standard vacuum suit. Good enough for short walks outside the ship. Not so much for constant exposure to high radiation levels.
Shit, Holden said. Then, thanks.
He killed the comm panel and closed the locker. I'll need a full-on hazard suit, which means I'll be better in the radiation and not bullet-resistant at all.
How many times can you get yourself massively irradiated before it catches up with you? Naomi said.
Same as last time. At least one more,
Holden replied with a grin. Naomi didn't smile back. He hit the comm again and said,
Amos, bring me up a hazard suit from engineering. Whatever's the hardest thing we've got on board.
Okay, Amos replied.
Holden opened his equipment locker and took out the assault rifle he kept there. It was large, black, and designed to be intimidating. It would immediately mark anyone who carried it as a threat. He put it back and decided on a pistol instead. The hazmat suit would make him fairly anonymous. It was the sort of thing any member of the damage control team might wear during an emergency. If he was wearing only a service pistol in a hip holster, it might keep anyone from singling him out as part of the problem. And with the protomolecule loose on the king and the ship flooded with radiation, there would be a big problem. Because if Prax and Avasarala were right, and the protomolecule was linked even without a physical connection, then the goo on the king knew what the goo on Venus knew. Part of that was how human spaceships were put together, ever since it had disassembled the Arbogast. But it also meant it knew a lot about how to turn humans into vomit zombies. It had performed that trick a million times or so on Eros. It had practice. It was entirely possible that every single human on the king was now a vomit zombie. And sadly, that was the best-case scenario. Vomit zombies were walking death to anyone with exposed skin. But to Holden, in his fully sealed and vacuum-rated hazmat suit, they would be at worst a mild annoyance. The worst-case scenario was that the protomolecule was so good at changing humans now, the ship would be full of lethal hybrids like the one he'd fought in the cargo bay. That would be an impossible situation. So he chose to believe it wasn't true. Besides, the protomolecule hadn't made any soldiers on Eros. Miller hadn't really taken the time to describe what he'd run into there, but he'd spent a lot of time on the station looking for Julie, and he'd never reported being attacked by anything. The protomolecule was incredibly aggressive and invasive. It would kill a million humans in hours and turn them into spare parts for whatever it was working on. But it invaded at the cellular level. It acted like a virus, not an army.
Just keep telling yourself that, Holden thought.
It made what he was about to do seem possible. He took a compact semi-automatic pistol and holster out of the locker. Naomi watched while he loaded the weapons magazine and three spares, but she didn't speak. He had just pushed the last round into the final magazine when Amos floated into the compartment, dragging a large red suit behind him.
This is our best, Cap, he said, for when shit has gone truly wrong.
Should be plenty for the levels they've got on that ship. Max exposure time is 6 hours, but the air supply only lasts 2, so that's not an issue. Holden examined the bulky suit. The surface was a thick, flexible, rubbery substance. It might deter someone attacking with their fingernails or teeth, but it wouldn't stop a knife or a bullet. The air supply was contained under the suit's radiation-resistant skin, so it made for a big, awkward lump on the wearer's back. The difficulty he had pulling the suit to himself and then stopping it told him its mass was considerable. "Won't be moving fast in this, will I?"
"No," Amos said with a grimace. "They're not made for a firefight. If the bullets start flying, you're fucked."
Naomi nodded but said nothing.
"Amos," Holden said, grabbing the mechanic's arm as he turned to leave. "The gunny's in charge once you hit the surface. She's a pro, and this is her show. But I need you to keep Prax safe, because he's kind of an idiot. The only thing I ask you to do is to get that man and his little girl safely off the moon and back to this ship."
Amos looked hurt for a moment.
"Of course I will, Captain. Anything that gets to him or that baby will already have killed me, and that ain't easy to do."
Holden pulled Amos to him and gave the big man a quick hug.
"I feel sorry for anything that tries. No one could ask for a better crewman, Amos. Just want you to know that."
Amos pushed him away.
"You act like you're not coming back."
Holden shot a look at Naomi, but her expression hadn't changed. Amos just laughed for a minute, then clapped Holden on the back hard enough to rattle his teeth.
"That's bullshit," Amos said. "You're the toughest guy I know."
Without waiting for Holden to reply, he headed out to the crew ladder, and then down to the deck below. Naomi pushed lightly against the bulkhead and drifted over to Holden. Air resistance brought her to a stop half a meter from him. She was still the most agile person in microgravity he'd ever met, a ballerina of null G. He had to stop himself from hugging her to him. The expression on her face told him it wasn't what she wanted. She just floated in front of him for a moment, not saying anything, then reached out and put one long, slender hand against his cheek. It felt cool and soft.
"Don't go," she said, and something in her voice told him it would be the last time.
He backed up and began shrugging his way into the hazmat suit.
"Then who? Can you see Avasarala fighting through a mob of vomit zombies? She wouldn't know the CIC from the galley. Amos has to go get that little girl. You know he does, and you know why. Prax has to be there. Bobby keeps them both alive."
He got the bulky suit over his shoulders and sealed up the front, but left the helmet lying against his back. The boot mags came on when he hit them with his heels, and he pushed down to the deck and stuck there.
"You?" he asked Naomi. "Do I send you?"
"I'd bet on you against 1,000 zombies any day of the week. But you don't know the CIC any better than Avasarala does. How does that make sense?"
"We just got right again," she said. "That's not fair."
"But," he said, "tell the Martians that me saving their planet makes us even on this whole you stole our warship issue, okay?"
He knew he was making light of the moment and immediately hated himself for it. But Naomi knew him, knew how afraid he was, and she didn't call him on it. He felt a rush of love for her that sent electricity up his spine and made his scalp tingle.
"Fine," she said, her face hardening. "But you're coming back. I'll be here on the radio the whole time. We'll work through this together, every step. No hero bullshit. Brains instead of bullets. And we work the problems together. You give me that. You better give me that."
Holden finally pulled her into his arms and kissed her.
"I agree. Please. Please help me make it back alive. I'd really like that."
Flying the Razorback to the crippled Agatha King was like taking a race car to the corner market. The King was only a few thousand kilometers from the Rocinante. It seemed close enough for an EVA pack and a really strong push. Instead, he flew what was probably the fastest ship in the Jupiter system in tea kettle mode, at about 5% thrust, through the debris of the recent battle. He could sense the Razorback straining at the leash, responding to his tiny bursts of steam with sullen reproach. The distance to the stricken flagship was short enough and the path treacherous enough that programming in a course would take more time than just flying by stick. But even at his languid pace, the Razorback seemed to have a hard time keeping its nose pointed at the king. "You don't want to go there," the ship seemed to be saying. "That's an awful place." "No. No, I really don't," he said, patting the console in front of him. "But just get me there in one piece, okay, honey?" The massive chunk of what must have once been a destroyer floated past, the ragged edges still glowing with heat. Holden tapped the stick and pushed the Razorback sideways to get a bit more distance from the floating wreckage. The nose drifted off course. "Fight all you want, we're still going to the same place." Some part of Holden was disappointed that the transit was so dangerous. He'd never flown to Io before, and the view of the moon at the edge of his screens was spectacular. The massive volcano of molten silicate on the opposite side of the moon was throwing particles so high into space he could see the trail it left in the sky. The plume cooled into a spray of silicate crystals, which caught Jupiter's glow and glittered like diamonds scattered across the black. Some of them would drift off to become part of Jupiter's faint ring system, blown right out of Io's gravity well. In any other circumstance, it would have been beautiful. But the hazardous flight kept his attention on his instruments and the screens in front of him, and always the growing bulk of the Agatha King floating alone at the center of the junk cloud. When he was within range, Holden signaled the ship's automated docking system. But, as he'd suspected, the King didn't respond. He piloted up to the nearest external airlock and told the Razorback to maintain a constant distance of 5 meters. The racing ship was not designed to dock with another ship in space. It lacked even a rudimentary docking tube. His trip to the King would be a short spacewalk. Avasarala had gotten a master override code from Souther, and Holden had the Razorback transmit it. The airlock immediately cycled open. Holden topped off the hazmat suit's air supply in the Razorback's airlock. Once he got onto Nguyen's flagship, he couldn't trust the air, even in the suit recharging stations. Nothing from the King could be allowed inside his suit. Nothing. When his stored air gauge read 100%, he turned on the radio and called Naomi. "I'm going in now." He kicked off his boot mags, and a sharp push against the inner airlock door sent him across the short gap to the King. "I'm getting a good picture," Naomi said. The video link light on his HUD was on. Naomi could see everything he could see. It was comforting and lonely at the same time, like making a call to a friend who lived very far away. Holden cycled the airlock. The 2 minutes while the King closed the outer door and then pumped air into the chamber seemed to last forever. There was no way to know what would be on the other side of the inner airlock door when it finally opened. Holden put his hand on the butt of his pistol with a nonchalance he didn't feel. The inner door slid open. The sudden screech of his hazmat suit's radiation alarm nearly gave him a heart attack. He chinned the control that killed the audible alarm, though he kept the outside radiation level meter running. It wasn't data that actually did him any good, but the suit was reassuring him that it could handle the current levels, and that was nice. Holden stepped out of the airlock into a small compartment filled with storage lockers and EVA equipment. It looked empty, but a small noise from one of the lockers alerted him, and he turned just in time to see a man in a UN naval uniform burst out of the locker and swing a heavy wrench at his head. The bulky hazmat suit kept him from moving quickly, and the wrench struck a ringing blow off the side of his helmet. "Jim!" Naomi yelled over the radio.
die, you bastard! The Navy man yelled at the same time. He took a second swing, but he wasn't wearing mag boots, and without the push off the bulkhead to give him momentum, the swing did little more than start spinning the man around in the air. Holden grabbed the wrench out of his hand and threw it away. He caught the man to stop his spinning with his left hand and drew his pistol with his right.
"If you cracked my suit, I'm going to throw you out that airlock," Holden said.
He began flipping through suit status screens while keeping his pistol pointed at the wrench enthusiast.
"It looks okay," Naomi said, relief evident in her voice. "No reds or yellows. That helmet is tougher than it looks."
"What the hell were you doing in that locker?" Holden asked the man.
"I was here when it came on board," the man said. He was a compact-looking earther, with pale skin and flaming red hair cut close to the scalp. A patch on his suit said Larson. "All the doors sealed up during emergency lockdown. I was trapped in here, but I could watch what was happening on the internal security system. I was hoping to grab a suit and get out the airlock, but it was sealed too.
Say, how'd you get in here?"
"I have Admiralty-level overrides," Holden said to him. Quietly to Naomi, he said, "At current radiation levels, what's survival odds for our friend here?"
"Not bad," Naomi said, "if we get him into sick bay in the next couple of hours."
To Larson, he said, "Okay, you're coming with me. We're going to CIC. Get me there fast, and you've got to ride off this tub."
"Yes, sir," Larson said with a salute.
"He thinks you're an admiral," Naomi laughed.
"Larson, put on an environment suit. Do it fast."
"Sir, yes, sir."
The suits they had in the airlock storage lockers would at least have their own air supplies. That would cut down on damage from the radiation the young sailor was absorbing. And an airtight suit would reduce the risk of protomolecule infection as they made their way through the ship. Holden waited until Larson had shrugged into a suit, then transmitted the override code to the hatch, and it slid open.
"After you, Larson. Command Information Center as fast as you can. If we run into anyone, especially if they're throwing up, stay away and let me deal with them."
"Yes, sir," Larson said, his voice fuzzy over the static-filled radio, then pushed off into the corridor. He took Holden at his word and led him on a fast trip through the crippled Agatha King. They stopped only when a sealed hatch blocked their way, and then only long enough for Holden's suit to convince it to open. The areas of the ship they moved through didn't look damaged at all. The bioweapon pod had hit farther aft, and the monster had headed straight to the reactor room. According to Larson, it had killed a number of people on the way, including the ship's entire contingent of Marines when they tried to stop it. But once it had entered engineering, it mostly ignored the rest of the crew. Larson said that shortly after it got into engineering, the ship-wide security camera system had gone offline. With no way to know where the monster was, and no way out of the airlock storage room, Larson had hidden in a locker to wait it out.
"When you came in, all I could see was this big lumpy red thing," Larson explained. "I thought maybe you were another one of those monsters."
The lack of visible damage was a good thing. It meant all the hatches and other systems they came across still worked. The lack of a monster rampaging through the ship was even better. The thing that had Holden worried was the lack of people. A ship this size had over 1,000 crew persons. At least some of them should be in the areas of the ship they were passing through, but so far they hadn't run across a single one. The occasional puddle of brown goo on the floor was not an encouraging sign. Larson stopped at a locked hatch to let Holden catch his breath. The heavy hazmat suit was not built for long treks, and it was starting to fill up with the stink of his own sweat. While he took a minute to rest and let the suit's cooling systems try to bring his temperature down, Larson said, "We'll be going past the forward galley to one of the elevator bays. The CIC is on the deck just above. 5-10 minutes tops." Holden checked his air supply and saw that he had burned nearly half of it.
He was rapidly approaching the point of no return. But something in Larson's voice caught his ear. It was the way he said, "galley."
"Is there something I should know about the galley?"
Larson said, "I'm not sure, but after the cameras went out, I kept hoping someone was going to come get me. So I started trying to call people on the comm. When that didn't work, I started having the king do location checks on people I knew. After a while, no matter who I asked about, the answer was always the forward galley."
"So," Holden said, "there might be upwards of 1,000 infected Navy people crammed into that galley?"
Larson gave a shrug, barely visible in his environment suit.
"Maybe the monster killed them and put them there."
"Oh, I think that's exactly what happened," Holden said, taking out his gun and working the slide to chamber around. "But I seriously doubt they stayed dead."
Before Larson could ask what he meant, Holden had his suit unlock the hatch. "When I open this door, you head to the elevator as fast as you can. I'll be right behind you. Don't stop no matter what. You have to get me to that CIC. Are we clear?"
Larson nodded inside his helmet.
"Good. On three."
Holden began counting, one hand on the hatch, the other holding his gun. When he hit three, he shoved the hatch open. Larson put his feet against a bulkhead and pushed off down the corridor on the other side. Tiny blue flickers floated in the air around them like fireflies, like the lights Millard reported when he was on Eros the second time, the time he didn't come back from. The fireflies were here now, too. At the end of the corridor, Holden could see the elevator door. He began clumping after Larson on his magnetic boots. When Larson was halfway down the corridor, he passed an open hatch. The young sailor started screaming. Holden ran as fast as the clumsy hazmat suit and his magnetic boots would let him go. Larson kept flying down the corridor, but he was screaming and flailing at the air like a drowning man trying to swim. Holden was almost to the open hatch when something crawled out of it and into his path. At first, he thought it was the kind of vomit zombie he'd run into on Eros. It moved slowly, and the front of its Navy uniform was covered in brown vomit. But when it turned to look at Holden, its eyes glowed with a faint inner blue, and there was an intelligence in them the Eros zombies hadn't had. The protomolecule had learned some lessons on Eros. This was the new, improved version of the vomit zombie. Holden didn't wait to see what it was going to do. Without slowing his pace, he raised his pistol and shot it in the head. To his relief, the light went out of its eyes, and it spun away from the deck, spraying brown goo in an arc as it rotated. When he passed the open hatch, he risked a glance inside. It was full of the new vomit zombies. Hundreds of them. All their disconcertingly blue eyes were aimed at him. Holden turned back to the corridor and ran. From behind, he heard a rising wave of sounds as the zombies moaned as one and began climbing along the bulkheads and deck after him.
"Go! Get in the elevator!" he screamed at Larson, cursing at how much the heavy hazmat suit slowed him down.
"God, what was that?" Naomi said. He'd forgotten she was watching. He didn't waste breath answering. Larson had come out of his panic-induced fugue and was busily working the elevator doors open. Holden ran up to him and then turned around to look behind. Dozens of the blue-eyed vomit zombies filled the corridor behind him, crawling on the bulkheads, ceiling, and deck like spiders. The floating blue light swirled on air currents Holden couldn't feel.
"Go faster," he said to Larson, sighting down his pistol at the lead zombie and putting a bullet in its head. It floated off the wall, spraying goo as it went. The zombie behind it shoved it out of the way, which sent it spinning down the corridor toward them. Holden moved in front of Larson to protect him, and a spray of brown slime hit his chest and visor.
If they hadn't both been wearing sealed suits, it would have been a death sentence. He repressed a shudder and shot two more zombies. The rest didn't even slow down. Behind him, Larson cursed as the partially open doors snapped shut again, pinning his arm. The sailor worked them back open, pushing them with his back and one leg. "We're in," Larson yelled. Holden began backing up toward the elevator shaft, emptying the rest of his magazine as he went. Half a dozen more zombies spun away, spraying goo. Then he was in the shaft, and Larson shoved the door shut. "Up one level," Larson said, panting with fear and exertion. He pushed off the bulkhead and floated up to the next set of doors, then levered them open. Holden followed, replacing the magazine in his gun. Directly across from the elevator was a heavily armored hatch with CIC stenciled in white on the metal. Holden moved toward it, having his suit transmit the override code. Behind him, Larson let the elevator doors slam shut. The howling of the zombies echoed up the elevator shaft. "We should hurry," Holden said, hitting the button to open the CIC and bulling his way in before the hatch had finished cycling open. Larson floated through after him. There was a single man still in the CIC, a squat, powerfully built Asian man with an admiral's uniform and a large caliber pistol in one shaky hand.
"Stay where you are," the man said.
"Admiral Nguyen," Larson blurted out, "you're alive." Nguyen ignored him.
"You're here for the bioweapon launch vehicle remote codes. I have them here."
He held up a hand terminal.
"They're yours in exchange for a ride off this ship."
"He's taking us," Larson said, pointing at Holden. "He said he'd take me too."
"No fucking way," Holden said to Nguyen. "Not a chance. Either give me those codes because there's a scrap of humanity left in you, or give them to me because you're dead. I don't give a shit either way. You decide."
Nguyen looked back and forth from Larson to Holden, clutching the hand terminal and the pistol so tightly that his knuckles were white.
"No, you have to..."
Holden shot him in the throat. Somewhere in his brainstem, Detective Miller nodded in approval.
"Start working on an alternate route back to my ship," Holden said to Larson, as he walked across the room to grab the hand terminal floating by Nguyen's corpse.
It took him a moment to find the King's self-destruct switch hidden behind a locked panel. Souther's override code gave him access to that, too.
"Sorry," Holden said quietly to Naomi as he opened it. "I know I sort of agreed not to do that anymore, but I didn't have time to..."
"No," Naomi said, her voice sad. "That bastard deserved to die. And I know you'll feel like shit about it later. That's good enough for me." The panel opened, and a simple button lay on the other side. It wasn't even red, just a plain industrial white.
"This is what blows the ship?"
"No timer," Naomi said.
"Well, this is an anti-boarding failsafe. If someone opens this panel and presses this button, it's because the ship is lost. They don't want it on a timer someone can just disarm."
"This is an engineering problem," Naomi said. She already knew what he was thinking, and she was trying to get an answer out before he could say it. "We can solve this."
"We can't," Holden said, waiting to feel the sorrow, but instead feeling a sort of quiet peace. "There are a couple hundred very angry zombies trying to get up the elevator shaft right now. We won't come up with a solution that doesn't leave me stranded in here anyway."
A hand squeezed his shoulder. He looked up, and Larson said, "I'll press it."
"No, you don't have to."
Larson held out his arm. The sleeve of his environment suit had a tiny tear where the elevator doors had closed on it. Around the tear was a palm-sized brown stain.
"Just rotten fucking luck, I guess. But I watched the Eros feeds like everyone else," Larson said. "You can't risk taking me. Pretty soon I might be..."
He paused and pointed back toward the elevator with his head. Might be one of those. Holden took Larson's hand in his. The thick gloves made it impossible to feel anything. I'm very sorry. Hey, you tried, Larson said with a sad smile. At least now I won't die of thirst in a suit locker. Admiral Souther will know about this, Holden said. I'll make sure everyone knows. Seriously, Larson said, floating next to the button that would turn the Agatha King into a small star for a few seconds. He pulled off his helmet and took a long breath. There's another airlock 3 decks up. If they aren't in the elevator shaft yet, you can make it. Larson, you should go away now. Holden had to strip off his suit in the King's airlock. It was covered in the goo, and he couldn't risk taking it onto the Razorback. He absorbed a few rads while he stole another UN vac suit from one of the lockers and put it on instead. It looked exactly like the one Larson was wearing. As soon as he was back on the Razorback, he sent the remote command codes to Souther's ship. He was nearly back to the Rocinante when the King vanished in a ball of white fire.